Blog Talk Radio.
Best-selling and award-winning author of true crime and crime fiction, Yvonne Mason is back with a brand new book, The Pink Canary, a book that delves into the life of a drag queen and a marvelous whodunit. You can find this and all of Yvonne's other works on Amazon.com or find Yvonne Mason on Facebook and Twitter.
You're gonna kill me.
Buy your copy of Pink Canary now.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's Wednesday night, and yes, it is off the chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and yes, that was a piece of shameless promotion. That is my comedy, The Pink Canary, and if you're into drag queens and all that goes along with drag queens, you'll love it. It's hysterically funny. And if you're looking for a good ad man, that young man that just did my ad, his name is Christopher Dunham. He has his own radio show as well. He's getting it put back up, but he also does ads, and he's very, very reasonable. He's also looking for sponsors to help him with his radio shows, and he will help do ads as well as with the sponsorship. Find him on my Facebook page, Christopher Dunham, and let him do some ads for you, because I'm going to tell you, my book sales have really, really increased since I've been doing the shameless promotions with Chris's ads. We have been off for the weekend. It's been a kind of crazy weekend here in sunny Florida. It decided that it was going to be New York cold. I like to froze to death. I'm ready to send all the snowbirds back home because they brought the cold with them. But that being said, tonight's show is a first-time author, and as I was doing my research on him, I'm amazed at this man. I'm almost envious of him because he is so, so multi-talented. His name is Carlos Colon, and he was born in Spanish Harlem, which brings a song to my head because I was of the era of the 60s where they sang that beautiful song. He was raised in the South Bronx during the turbulent late 1960s and early 70s. He graduated with an English degree from Lehman College, CUNY, in 1980. He spent the following years working various sales jobs while also working with film producers on developing original screenplays and adaptions he'd written in later years. He founded and is still performing as the frontman for the Jersey Shore Roustabouts, a retro rock and roll group with a loyal following in the New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania area. And I'm probably going to destroy the title of his book, but I hope he forgives me. Sangre, The Color of Dying, is his first published novel, and it has already been receiving praise for its unique approach towards a well-worn genre. Now, before the show, we were talking about the sequel that he's working on, but it's not going to be out this year because he's busy doing something else, which we will get into. So help me with a very, very warm welcome for him as my first-time guest, but not the last time. He will become a regular on the show because this young man is going places that he hasn't been before. Welcome, Carlos. I am so happy you are here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Yvonne. I'm so glad.
So tell me a little bit about...
Repeat that to me. Come on. Sangre, come on. So
sangre.
You have to roll your R. Sangre.
Sangre.
There you
sangre.
Go.
I like that. So tell me a little bit about Carlos. Your bio is...
Carlos.
Wonderful.
Roll your R. Carlos.
So tell me about Carlos.
Well, you pretty much covered my life story there. I was born at the Metropolitan Hospital, and I was living in the South, Spanish Harlem, 123rd Street. And then we graduated to the South Bronx. This was all during the early, I'm aging myself, I guess, but the early to mid-60s. As you stated, I did graduate as an English major, And I was writing all that time. I was writing plays. I was writing stories. And I had one of my college professors. He used to call me Hemingway. And I eventually won honorary mention for an award for playwriting in my graduation year. Between you and me, I should have won. My play was way better than the one that won. But, hey, you know. But, yeah, so after that long career in sales and insurance while also working with producers on screenplays, both original and adaptations, and none of them got past development hell. But when I started the Jersey Shore Rouse about 10 years ago, I also started writing this story. It was just a lingering story that I had, and it took me that long to finally complete it. So, you know what? I'm still making corrections and additions and so forth. But finally, it's edited to its best form, and it's been getting so much praise this past. This past week or 2 weeks ago, it was voted one of the top 10 novels of the year written by a Latino author. So I was very proud of that.
Wonderful. Well, let's back before we get into the meat of the matter, because you've heard my shows. You know I like to keep my listeners on edge. It's like the news show, and they say, and coming up is going to be XYZ, and so you sit there and you wait, and then they say, and coming up is going to be XYZ, until it's towards the end of the newscast, and they go, oh, and XYZ happened, and you're going, I sat all the time for this, but you don't want to leave because it might be really important. So before we get into the meat of the matter, Spanish Harlem has always been a fantasy city of mine. I've never been to New York. I would love to go. It's on my bucket list. But do you remember the song Spanish Harlem that came out in the 60s? It was one of the most beautiful songs that came out during that time. Tell our audience, if you will, why it's called Spanish Harlem and the dynamic of that city that, to me, it has such a romantic air about it.
You know, I actually do have romantic memories of that era, but I also have very, very real memories of that era.
So do I.
I grew up in Spanish Harlem in the late 50s through early 1960s. My mother worked at the Apollo Theater, and I remember, she was a single mom at the time. My father had left early on, and I remember her taking me to work there. You know, I was in the area where the bowling alley was. There was a attached to a bowling alley. I don't know if people realize that, and there was pool tables there, and I remember just bothering the hell out of everybody, taking the balls off the pool table and just creating all kinds of havoc. And my mother was asked out on a date by one of the musicians playing there, and it is believed that that musician was the bass player for Buddy Holly.
Wow.
Yeah. So, the Spanish Harlem is on the east side of the upper Manhattan. Yes, it was mainly Hispanics living in that area. I have many memories of walking on Third Avenue with my mother and her friends. And when you're a child, it's such a big world when you're a child, I do have nice memories of it, but it was also rough. We were poor. We were very poor. We were living in a tenement where the bathtub was actually in the kitchen, which people can't believe that. But, yeah, I remember taking baths while my mother was cooking, you know. So it was a very, it was a very different life.
But it, the – I guess, for lack of a better expression, the way that the trade, it's a warm feeling when you hear that song. You want to dance to it because it's got such a warm connotation to it.
Well, I may be a little bit biased, but the Latinos, the Hispanics, they are a very passionate and warm people. They're very, you know, and I know the way we're portrayed on TV and you know, in movies sometimes doesn't show that, but we're a very passionate and warm people. And I think the song does capture that.
Yeah, and I agree you are. I have several Hispanic friends that I wouldn't take anything. They're very, very loyal. They're very warm. They're very passionate. They're very caring. And I enjoy being around them because they make me feel good. And I can't say that for a lot of people.
Well, you know what? We like making people feel good.
I know. Because it comes across in the music. It comes across in your works, in your writings. It comes across in your in the way that you approach people. I have never seen such open-minded people as the Latino community. I mean, they are very open-minded. They're accepting, I think, is the word I'm looking for.
That's one of the things that was captured in the novel that both Latinos and non-Latinos caught on to was that it captured the Latino people and their family values and their loyalty to one another.
And to those they love, whether they're blood or not. One of my best friends was brought over from Cuba as a child, so he's got Latino blood in him all the way through. I mean, this young man, if he was any more Latino, I don't know if I could stand him. But he is fiercely loyal and fiercely loving and fiercely honest.
Yes,
and that's one of the reasons.
Yes, we can sometimes be honest to the point of being brutal, but you know, there's, you know, all people have different. There are different kinds of all people. We also have the dishonest ones. You know, the ones that you know, we're just like everybody else. You know,
but I understand the brutal honesty because I'm from the South and we're brutally honest, but we do it with a bless your heart and a smile. And Southerners are portrayed in the same way, Carlos. In some of the films that I've seen, Southerners are portrayed as backwards, ignorant, stupid, revengeful, racist. So you get the whole gamut. But in the end, we're all just people.
We are people who need people.
There you, and there's a song about that. Now, moving on to your band, the Jersey Shore Roustabouts. Before we talk about that band, there was a band that you were in before that, when I was doing my research on you, you were the lead vocals and the former front man for the rock band Prisoners of Pigs on Parade.
Those are two separate bands, Prisoner and Pigs on Parade.
Okay.
I was a punk rocker back in the late 70s and early 80s. I played at CBGBs. I wore the makeup. I tied my hair up. I had it standing up. Yep, I did all that, yeah. And it was a lot of fun. I met a lot of interesting people. I was offered a lot of great drugs. Didn't take them, but, you know, it was an interesting era.
Well, what made you go into music with the background that you had in writing and English? I mean, granted, they're both story. You still tell a story with music, but it's just interesting that you flip-flop those so seamlessly.
Well, my biological father was in a band, a Spanish band with my uncle. So the music roots were already there in me. And I always loved playing music, singing. So that was always a part of my life. You know, but I also always loved telling stories. When I was a child, I used to draw comic books for my mother and my stepfather, who I consider my real father. He's the one that raised me. And, you know, and they saw very early on that I liked to tell stories and that I had a gift for entertaining.
So after you left the two punk bands, is that when you helped form or were part of the Jersey Shore Roustabouts? Because they've been around for a while. They've been around for several years, have they not?
Yeah, this is our 11th year. And I was out of the music scene for a long time. I was raising my family. You know, I got married, a respectable man. Well, maybe not respectable, but anyway, I was working man. And you know, so after my kids were grown, I realized that I kind of missed playing music, and then I got the desire to get back out and do it all over again, and I had no idea, you know, how to go about starting a band at that age, but somehow it just managed to all come together, and we gained a very nice following, and this is our 11th year, and I'm very proud of the fact that, you know, we have a wonderful band of guys, and that we have people that love coming out to see us over and over again.
And you're known in three separate states. You're known in Jersey, in New York, in Pennsylvania. Do you have venues that you go to over and over again in those states to play and perform?
We play monthly at a place over here called Christopher's Pub. It's at inside of a Howard Johnson's hotel. And then there are places that call us back every year. You know, usually in the summer concerts, there are places that they always make sure that they have us on their schedule.
I tell you what, I am purely envious because you are a man of many, many talents. And see, it would be nice if y'all could come down to sunny South Florida. I'd come see you play down here, and then I could say, yeah, I saw them. I know them. Wouldn't that be good?
I'd love to. I'd love to be invited to play there.
See what we can work out. See if we can work out something. So during the time that you're not, that you were no longer playing in the rock band, that had disbanded because you got the family and you, as you said, tried to be respectable. And then to forming the new band, was
mm-hmm.
that when the writing bug bit you again, or were you writing during the entire time?
That's a great question. I would say the early 90s, I befriended a movie producer. He's made a lot of short subject films, some including some major stars like Stephen Bauer and Malcolm Jamal Warner. And he loved a couple of screenplays that I had written. And we were trying to get those produced. But you know how it is with the movie industry. I mean, you know, the screenplays that actually get made are like a drop in the bucket. I mean, there's so many stages. And, yeah, he flew me out to Hollywood, introduced me to other producers. We stayed at million-dollar homes owned by actresses and so forth. I mean, it was a fun time. I really enjoyed that. But unfortunately, I didn't get to the next level. I didn't become a J.J. Abrams or a Steven Spielberg or one of those guys.
But, you know, it's still not too late. That dream's still
out there. Well, you know, there are some things we're going to talk about later on in this show that I have there's some big stuff developing for this book.
Well, let's head in that direction. When you decided to pen this book, was this something that had been sitting around in the back of your brain with the characters and knocking on your brain cells saying, we want out, you got to let us out before we drive you crazy? How long did it stew back there before you decided to put it out there?
the best way that I can describe being a writer, whether it is music or a book, screenplay, is that it's a bodily function. It's almost involuntary. It just comes out of you. In about 20-plus years ago, I had developed, that's a sad, tragic thing, that a lot of ideas that I had many long ago actually wound up being produced by other people. And I had an idea about a vampire-type virus in New York City. Does that sound familiar? Because there is something now on TV called The Strain. Well, I had that idea many, many, many years ago, and the roots to this story come from there.
Well done. Well, I'm going to read a little bit about this, because, ladies and gentlemen, if you have not yet had the opportunity to read Carlos's debut novel, you should. Because sadly I haven't yet, but when I read the synopsis, I said I'm downloading this on my Kindle and I'll probably have to stay up all night, because this is not, I have read vampire novels since all the way back to Bram Stoker. I read Anne Rice, I've read good vampire novels, I've read bad vampire novels, I've seen good vampire film, I've seen very bad vampire film. To begin with, vampires do not glitter. But that being said, I hear you laughing. You know where I'm, what I'm talking about. They do not glitter, ladies.
It's mentioned in the book.
That they do not glitter. Vampires do not glitter. Trust me, they don't. But that being said, the spin that Carlos put on his character, in my mind, as a vampire reader, is highly acceptable to me. And the reason is because if one goes back and studies vampires, there's degrees of vampirism. And this character only reaches one of those degrees. So he doesn't lose the essence that is him. And I'm going to read you the synopsis of this, and then you'll understand what I'm talking about. Introducing Nicky Negron, a Bronx-born Puerto Rican salesman. Now, who is Carlos taking his character after? Carlos said that he sold insurance, he lived in the Bronx, and he's of Spanish heritage. So think of Carlos when you think of this character, who has suffered enough tragedy. See, I picked up on that right away. Who has suffered enough tragedy for multiple lifetimes. After a business dinner in New York City, Nicky's life is cut short at the hands of a ravishing undead woman at the Ritz-Carlton, resulting in a public sex scandal that leaves a legacy of humiliation for his surviving wife and children. When he rises from the dead, he becomes a night predator that feeds on human blood as well. The difference is, Nicky has a genetic resistance that retains his humanity, a trait that makes him reluctant to victimize innocence. Hampered by conscience, he instead decides to feed on what he deems are the undesirables of society: prisoners, sexual predators, domestic abusers. I could send a few of those to him, and others that lower the quality of life around him. Sangre, The Color of Dying, features rough language, jaw-dropping sex, and abhorred acts of violence, but its real emphasis is on the human being living inside the undead Night Stalker. Nicky values his family, his ethnicity, and is determined to hold on to his humanity, even if it's just by rooting for the Mets, watching old Seinfeld episodes, or reminiscing about the love he once shared with his wife. Readers are already falling in love with Nicky and this thrilling tale that takes supernatural horror and a completely new direction. Now, to me, that is very believable, because as human beings, we have a natural to some strains of illnesses, diseases, or whatever. Why not have a natural resistance to becoming the undead without a conscience?
That is the core of the story. It's very difficult to describe to someone who hasn't read it how this story is about as realistic as you can take the supernatural. Now, I'm not going to say that we don't have a little bit of fun with it. There's a lot of fun. Nikki has a filthy mouth and a real bad attitude, and when you consider the tragedies that he's experienced, it's understandable. But the main key that I wanted to do with this story was to make it as believable as possible. There was one of the editors that was working on the book. He actually looked at me and he said, "Is this true?" He said, "Of course it's not true. It's a vampire's dummy." But, you know, what I did was I made it look like it could be true. And that's what separates it from everything else, because people can relate to what's real. And this story is very, very real.
And the thing is, even with my not reading the book yet, and I apologize for that, I had every intention, but and my life is a moment by moment. But even with not reading the book, I already see, just in the synopsis, I see the life lessons that come out of this book. And I am a firm believer that any book that we read, if we read it with an open mind, whether it's nonfiction, whether it's old literature, whether it's even a sales paper or fiction, it doesn't matter. If we read with an open mind, we can learn something from that book. And
there's a lot to learn in this book. I'm going to tell you right now, because I wrote it as if it was Nikki's biography. So we're learning a lot about growing up in the South. Growing up in Spanish Harlem. We're learning a lot about the Puerto Rican family culture. We're learning a lot about I actually put a lot of science into the story, so to make it as believable as possible. So yeah, there is a lot that you can learn. I remember when my wife was reading the book, and she was reading some of the medical passages and some of the scientific passages. You can see, where did you learn this stuff? You know, and you know, when you write a book, you have to research your subject well. Even though this is entertainment, even though it's in the quote horror genre, which I am almost hesitant to put in a horror genre, you know, you have to take it seriously. And because if you take your story seriously, the reader will appreciate that, and they will enjoy it even more.
And it puts the reader in the book itself. The reader becomes part of the book because all of the research is done. You've taken Spanish Harlem, you've taken the Bronx, you've taken the Puerto Rican ethnicity, you've taken things that you know, being a salesman, family life, the Mets, which you are very much a fan of, and put it into this story. And when a reader crawls into this book, they don't want to crawl out, I'm sure, because it is such a riveting, important story, and they're learning all these new things, like you said, the medical terminology, the science, it could happen.
An actor wrote to me a week or so ago, and he told me that when he finished it, he was actually in tears. And this actor was a former cop in New York City. So this
Wow.
is a tough guy, and he was brought to tears. So that's the kind of That is how powerful the story is. I'm really proud of it, and I just wish that I just want that the people to read it to really feel what was written in there, because it is a very deep book for something. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. There is nothing more overdone over the past decade than vampires, zombies, and superheroes. I mean, what can you do that's different with that? And, I started this, before everything, hit the fan with this genre, but still, I believe that it survives a genre and brings something new. And that was one of the reviews from, I think it was Living La Vida Latina, mentioned that it brings something new. And the reviews have been great. The Scream magazine gave it 4 stars. Like we said before, it was voted in the top 10 novels of 2016. Written by a Hispanic author.
Well, even the title does not give any hint as to the content of the book, because it's sangre, the color of dying. That could mean anything. It's only when one reads about the book. And I don't think you could have found a more perfect title for it, because he actually continually dies day after day if he doesn't replenish his blood supply.
Yes, and let's talk about content. Because I have friends that have read it. A lot of them are ladies, and I sometimes blush because, there is some very intense abnormal sexual activity in this book that, when a woman friend tells me that she read it, I immediately apologize. But then I had a friend of mine tell me that, hey, when my wife read that, I got to thank you, because she was really turned on. So,
Colin perception.
I don't know. Maybe women have stranger fantasies than men do, but I gotta tell you, there is some very strange stuff that goes on in that book. And before I was apologizing, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I should get
even
stranger.
No, you should never apologize. Say thank you. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I had fun writing it.
But it is. I mean, so yes, the story is very real. It's very emotional. It is a very, very emotional story. But I don't want people to think that it's a downer. It is a fun book. It is really a very entertaining book, and people have fallen in love with the characters. And that is, I think, the biggest key to storytelling, is make people know the characters, love who they want, who they're supposed to love, and hate who they're supposed to hate.
And even love to hate the people they're supposed to hate, because a good character, that's what you do. There's been many characters that I've watched in film or on a television series. You love to hate them because they embrace that character so well. You actually think that's who it is.
And, I won't put any spoilers there, but, people do get theirs, it is. There are some very gory moments in the book, but it's not about the gore. It's not about it's about the people and their emotions. The running themes in this book they're adult themes. I mean, this is an adult story. You know how the big trend over the past year is young adult novel. Well, now
yes,
this is an adult novel. About something that normally would attract young adults. There are themes of loss. There are themes of guilt, themes of redemption, themes of adultery, divorce. There's so many running themes in this book that is why people really relate to it.
So now you've got to get the second book out, The Wrong Side of Tomorrow, because when now, ladies and gentlemen, you cannot leave this show and go order that book. You got to stay on this show. You can go order the book after the show. It's still going to be on Amazon. It's not going to go anywhere. But once they deluge you and your sales shoot through the roof, you're going to start getting hate mail because people are going to start saying, okay, where's the second book? I need the second book. Which brings us to my next question.
Let me tell you something. The ending of the book literally leaves an open door, and people want to know what happens when that door is opened. And honestly, I never intended on a sequel. People are amazed when I tell them that. But you left it like that. How can you not plan on a sequel? I left what I think is a fantastic ending that will let people's imaginations run wild. But now, with popular demand, yes, I have begun the sequel, and it really goes into so much more than the first one. And that door that was opened, put it this way, you will get your answers.
Or maybe not, because you may wind up doing a third one.
You will get your answers, but the story of Sangre is a complete story. It is a complete story. It is a fun story. It is a very emotional story. And if I can make a veteran police officer, New York City police officer, no less, move him to tears, I'm sure that a lot of people will be moved to tears when they read the book, but they'll also have a lot of fun because Nikki is a fun character. He's a badass.
Well,
not like me.
Well, that brings me to the next point, and that people are going to have to wait a little bit longer for The Wrong Side of Tomorrow because you've got your hands in a couple of pies besides going all over the tri-state area and playing with the Jersey Shore Roustabouts. You're into doing some other things, correct?
Well, yes. This is going to be the first time that I announce it. But we are working on bringing Nikki to the screen. I am speaking with an award-winning film director, some other an actor that is in a hit show right now on television, as well as some other actors involved in bringing Nikki to the big screen. I have a producer in California right now working on it as well. Today I was with an attorney, and I shouldn't say big screen. I'm just going to say screen because over the past couple of weeks, because it was so hard, the screenplay is already completed. I have written the screenplay, and it's already being passed around, getting a lot of buzz. But it is over 2.5 hours, the screenplay.
Wow.
Which makes people think about whether it should be. And by the way, and that was with cutting a lot out. But that which means that the other options besides a movie could be a miniseries or a cable television series. So that is going on as we speak. It is in the very embryonic stage. No announcements have been made. We can't because no contracts have been signed. Like I said, I was speaking to an attorney today. But don't be surprised if you start hearing some news about Nikki being in development before the spring.
That is fantastic. That is because I see this. I see this book on film, whether it's made for television or whether it's in the theaters and then spreads out everywhere else, because, like you say, story has not one river running through it, but it has several rivers running through it. You've got plots, you've got subplots, and it all comes together in the end, and it's also Nikki having to fight within himself his moral compass and the fact that he's doing these things that he really doesn't want to do, but he requires it. It's not something he can control. And he makes conscious decisions to only destroy those that cannot be fixed.
It's funny. Well, we're talking with producers, you know, and directors, and they're always coming up with like trying to describe a movie treatment by using past movies. They'll go like, "Oh yeah, you know, like this is like you know, Godfather meets Love Story," which by the way, this book does have elements of that. But we were talking about, and it was hard, but we were talking about how can you describe this book using movies. We were saying, start out with the movie Boyhood. You know the movie Boyhood that was made?
Yes.
About a child that was growing up. And start out with the movie Boyhood, then it turns into Ordinary People. Remember the movie Ordinary People with Mary Tyler Moore? Okay?
Yes.
All right. Then it turns into Love Story, you know, Ryan O'Neill and, okay? And then it turns into Taxi Driver. And then after Taxi Driver, it goes right into all of the vampire action. So it by the time you get to all the craziness, you've seen a real story about real people. And by the time all the craziness begins, you're going to see how real people react to an unreal situation.
I can't wait to see it. But before I see it, I have to read the book because, like you say, if it's a 2.5-hour screenplay, and you left out a lot of it because you have to.
Yes, yes.
I can just imagine what the book is.
It is very epic. And one theme that I didn't mention is, because we were talking about before, how do you scare people these days? I mean, people have been zombie to death. People have been vampire to death. I mean, how do you scare people? Maybe you can't really scare them, but you can disturb them. And one of the important elements about this story is we are looking at the horror and the atrocities that are committed by humans, and yet the figure of horror, the monster, is the one that is dealing with the humans that commit these atrocities. So it is almost horror in reverse.
That is very well stated. You should use that and tell the guys to use that in their little blurbs, because that's exactly what it is. And if Nikki has the capability in the story of picking up the conscience or lack thereof of the people that he feeds off of, then he's also picking up their horror, and he's having to relive it.
Yeah, and there is a lot of reliving. The story telling technique that I use in this and in the sequel, it's going to be a running theme, and it's going to also be it is part of the screenplay, which may wind up being a teleplay, but whichever it winds up being, but it does alternate timelines, so you are seeing Nikki in the past as a human and Nikki in the present as a vampire, and they're concurrent running storylines. So it is almost like The Godfather Part II, if you remember how that was told, where you have the story in the past running parallel with the story in the present.
This is magnificent, Carlos. I have no words, because what we've talked about makes me salivate, because I love a good book. And I love a good book that not only entertains me, but it rips at the human emotion and the human element. And bottom line is, we all live with our own horror in our lives. Things have happened to us. Things have happened to the people that we love. We have done things that we might not be proud of. But we live with all that horror, guilt, redemption, and all the human emotions that Nicky is showing in your book?
Well, he has to live with the fact that, you know, without getting too much into spoilers, he has to live with the fact that he died a very dishonorable death. It might have been out of control, but he died in a dishonorable death, and he has to witness his family having to deal with the humiliation of that. And he tries to make up for it in his own ways, but all he does when he tries to make up for it is make things worse, which is another theme in the book. Sometimes you have to accept what has happened and not to try to fix it because you don't belong. And he is constantly reminded that he does not belong.
And again, I go back to that. Sometimes we have, well, this is what I tell my children. For every action, there's always an equal and opposite reaction. And there is always a consequence for those actions. So we all have to deal with our decisions, whether they be right or wrong and indifferent. And in sometimes we have to stand on the sidelines as a result of those actions and the consequences we suffer and watch family members and friends go through things with us on the sidelines. And we may not be dead. We may still be alive, but we're no longer a part of that equation. And then that's what happened to Nicky. He was no longer part of that equation because he did something that was probably went against his complete conscience and against the grain, and he destroyed the things that were beautiful in his life.
Yeah, and that's what makes it a very, very moving story, I think.
I'm downloading this book tonight. No, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not doing it right now, neither can you. You've got to wait until the show is over because Carlos has some more things to talk about. Okay, other than the sequel that we're going to bring you back and talk about as you get more into it and more into this announcement tonight, I want to keep bringing you back so that we can follow your progress. What else have you got in your little quiver of arrows? Have you got some new books going in a new different direction? Have you got new music? Where are you going to be playing in the next month or so? Give us a skinny.
Yeah, we play every month over at the Howard Johnson's in Toms River, New Jersey. I haven't been writing any new music because, like you said, my plate is very full right now. And I did want to write other books because this is kind of a departure for me. I'm not really a horror novelist, but the demand for the screenplay to be written and the sequel, which I have begun, is pretty much taking up all of my time right now. And I'm having a lot of fun with the sequel now. Because now I know Nicky. I had to get to know him too, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I know
exactly.
Nicky. And when I put him in a situation, I know how he's going to react. And it's kind of fun doing that. So I am really having a good time writing The Wrong Side of Tomorrow, which is going to basically deal with the repercussions of what happened in the first book.
So when you finish The Wrong Side of Tomorrow and you get the screenplay and the movie and all that out of the way, where do you want to go? What's your next dream?
Well, you know, somehow, I don't know how I've fallen into this, I guess it was just me being persistent and pushing forward and not being afraid to kick doors open. But somehow I'm winding up being a producer here. I'm dealing with I'm putting up together a package to show to TV networks, production companies and investors. So I'm like becoming a producer at this point. And even though this is something that's totally new to me and I'm kind of learning it as I go along, I'm kind of enjoying it. So who knows, maybe I might go into that direction.
Anything is possible, because if you've listened to my shows, you've heard me say over and over and over again that one dream leads to another dream that leads to another dream. And sometimes we don't even know that that dream is out there until, like you say, you kick in a few doors and all of a sudden, bam, things start falling into place.
Well, you know, I'm at the age where I'm supposed to be planning my retirement, but you know what? I find that if I'm planning my retirement, that means I'm just planning on sitting around doing nothing, and I don't want to do that. And I'm enjoying this keeps me young, doing something totally new. So, I've met some really interesting people. I mean, I have had a past in the industry. You know, like I said, I've been to movie star homes, and I've have spoken with filmmakers and so forth. You know, who knows? Maybe, you know, maybe this.
It should be interesting.
Go in that direction, yeah.
Anything is possible, and all is highly probable. And ladies and gentlemen, I talk about this at every show. Is we're never too old to dream. We're never too young to dream. And with those dreams come responsibilities, and dreams are not just dropped down in our lap by the dream fairy. Like Carlos, like myself, like all the guests I've had on this show, you have to go out there and get those dreams. You have to make those dreams happen. You become the master of your own destiny. And in order to do that, you've got to decide that's what you want, and you want it more than anything else in the world.
Well, I think the people that I've been speaking to in the industry have found something refreshing in me in the sense that, you know, since I, you know what, you know, I've had a beautiful family, a beautiful home. You know, I've spent many years working in the traditional work industry. So when I approach the people in this production industry, they find me refreshing in the sense that I'm totally open with them. I said, listen, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing, but I need your help, so come over here and talk to me. And I talk to them like, you know, like I'm their equal, and they're both taken aback by it, but they like it too, and they feel like I'm someone who gets things done. So at this point, it has been moving forward in a way that I never imagined it would. And I don't know, I'm starting to feel like I fit in.
Well, you do. You fit right in. And the reason being is because you might not know what you're doing, but you're sure that you can do it once you figure it out.
Yeah, well, we'll certainly find out.
Well, we're going to get short on time here, so tell the folks where you can be found so that they can friend you on Facebook and get your book and keep up with what you're doing, because you are coming back. I just got to get back to my desk in my other office and figure out some dates so that we can bring you back and get you set back up in here. So tell the folks where you can be found.
Well, folks, first of all, I want to say you have to get this book. Get the e-book, get the printed book, whatever, but you have to get this book. Read this book. You will experience something that you've never experienced before. Now, you can learn more about the book at sangrethenovel.com, or you can go on the Facebook page, facebook.com/sangrethenovel. I even gave Nikki his own page, so you can be friends with Nikki, and he will willingly communicate with you. That being said, when you read the novel, please put reviews on Amazon. It is very helpful, believe it or not. Even if you just give it 5 stars and say, I like it, that helps, because when the more reviews get put up, Amazon puts it on their monthly newsletter, and it helps circulation, and it helps me pay bills. So please, buy the book, read the book, review the book.
Now, they can personally get hold of you on your Facebook page too, correct?
Absolutely. I love talking about, you know, everything, and I enjoy people very much. And so, yes, I love making new friends, so feel free to try and friend me on Facebook. And feel free to be Nikki's friend, too. He's lonely. I mean, this guy, you know, come on, the guy spends the whole day in a coffin, for crying out loud.
And he needs some visitors. So if in about a minute and a half, what advice would you have for dreamers?
I'm glad you asked me that, because if there's anything that I can say that could be considered advice is be yourself and be afraid of no one. No one is better than you. So when you think you're talking to like your favorite actor or director, hey, that guy is just the same as you are. He just worked hard and had a couple of breaks go his way. So if you're going after something, go after it like you're the equal of whoever you are. It is that you're talking to.
And you found that has worked for you because, like I said earlier, you may not know right now, but number one, you're willing to go and ask people that do know, that you can learn from. You're willing and that's the way we learn. You're willing to take their advice. You're willing to learn everything you can about the craft so that you can be the best at what you can be at it. And again, ladies and gentlemen, that is another important factor in realizing one's dreams. If you've got a dream but you don't know how to go after it, learn what it is about the dream, A, that you want, and B, what the dream is about. Research it. Become proficient at it. And if you can't get proficient at it overnight, BS it until you become proficient at it. I always say make it until you make it.
When you're taking on a big undertaking, like I don't know if that makes any grammatical sense, but when you're taking on something as large as something that I'm doing, as what I'm doing now, make sure that every day you've done something that brought you one step closer to your goal, which means at the end of the year you did 365 things that brought you closer to your goal. Because if you're constantly doing that and you're constantly building, you're going to see how possible it is to achieve what you previously thought was impossible.
Very good point. Excellent point. Ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night we have author Ann Goldfarb. You don't want to miss that one. On Friday night we have author Gray Dixon, and it will get hot and steamy here in the studio. And on Saturday night, we have author Alan Gravett. Carlos, I want to thank you. Now, when the show cuts us off, I don't want you to hang up because we're going to talk for a few minutes in archives. But I want to thank you very much for taking an hour of your time and spending it with me and talking with me and letting our 6,500 closest friends know about you. To me, that is very important, and I appreciate it so, so much that you have agreed to this. And like I said, I'm going to bring you back, so you're not going to be a stranger on this show.
And I thank you for giving me this hour. It's fun talking to you and fun talking about what's been going on.
So, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night, don't forget, 8 o'clock, author Ann Goldfarb. And as I say at the end of every show that I do, without the dreamers, there would be no environment. The dreamers are the ones who make our life beautiful. We have the dreamers. We have to have the artists. We have to have the painters. We have to have the musicians. We have to have the writers. So if that is your dream, make it happen. Love yourself, like yourself, be happy, because you are the only one that can make yourself happy. The happiness comes from within, not from without. So until next time, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, with my wonderful guest, Carlos Colon, and you now have our permission to run over to Amazon and purchase Sangre, The Color of Dying. Until tomorrow night, good night. Hang on, Carlos, if you will.
I'm still here.
That was perfect. You played a little bit of your guitar. I love it.
You there?
can I bring you back? Have you got any music that you can send me in MP3 form that when I bring you back we can play and talk about it?
I'll send you the whole album on MP3.
That would be perfect, because the next when you come, when I set you up again, we're going to talk about your music.
Oh, great. That's lovely.
Wouldn't
that
be cool? Yeah, because I'm sure all of your music is original. So what I'll do is I'll set you up maybe April, May. Let me see what I've got in April. April
sure.
would be a good month. Bring you back in April, and we'll just talk music.
Sounds good to
and
me.
And play your music. What I usually do is I play, when I do musicians, I play their music at the beginning like I did my ad. Then we talk for a little bit. And then I'll play another piece of music, and we'll discuss the music and the reason behind it and what birthed it and all that. And then we'll talk some more, and we'll play music throughout the whole hour. That way people can get to know you not only as a wonderful, wonderful author, but also as a musician-songwriter.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, well, send me the MP3s, and we'll set that up, and I will send you a couple of dates, and you tell me what's good for you, and then we'll set up another show.
Consider it done.
All right, my friend. Oh, and when we get off from here tonight, the show, of course, is going to go up into archives. As soon as it uploads into archives, I will send you the link, and I want you to spread it around, put it everywhere so people will know you are on my show, and then I will post this show on Spreaker, on Mixcloud, on SoundCloud, and on podcast.com. Now, when I post it on all of those podcasts, it goes all over the world, as well as this show goes all over the world. But when I post it on Spreaker, it automatically uploads to Stitcher, which is heard on Sirius Radio, and to YouTube. When it archives on Blog Talk Radio, this show automatically uploads to iTunes.
Cool.
And when I upload it to Spreaker, it is also uploaded to TuneIn Radio and FM.com.
Sounds good to me.
So you will be heard everywhere, but when I get all the podcasts uploaded, I will send you the links, so that you can also spread the podcast around. Use it any way you want to. Use it in any portion you want to. This is my gift to you. This is your show. Use it and get yourself out there even more.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you again, my new friend, for spending an hour with me. The hour flew by. It was a wonderful hour.
Oh, thank you. I enjoyed it, and you have yourself a nice evening.
All right, sweetheart, we'll get it set up for April, and I'll get back with you.
Okay.
Good night.